Ah, this has to be switched on, that's important. Otherwise the slides will not be seen. Oh. It's working, good. Okay. Good morning, everybody. I'm going to share the video as well. Good morning, everybody. I hope you hear and you're hearing and seeing me well. Today we have a guest lecture by Håkon Gunnlaugsen from Aidsiva. He is going to talk about intrusion detection in virtual networks, software-defined networks, and such. So this is our topic six. It is now going to happen before the topic four and topic five. However, we rearranged the schedule because of the availability of the presenter today. So that's no problem. The slides are already present in Blackboard. You can download them, and the recordings will hopefully work, and everything will be fine both in Blackboard Collaborate and in Omnom. So, Håkon, please, I'm going to start recording here in Collaborate as well. Now it's going to be recorded. You have the slides, so you just use the mouse and everything will be fine.
Yeah. Perfect. Can I use space here as well? Yes, I can. And back. Yes, that's all good. Yeah, good morning. I'm Håkon Gunnlaugsen. As Slobodan said, I'm working now in Aidsiva Bredbånd with security. I was a PhD student here for some years ago, so it feels good to be back. Today I'm going to talk about intrusion detection and protection in software-defined networks, or as you mentioned, virtual networks. I put up an agenda here, and I'm going to bring you through first why SDN in combination with IDS, IPS, is a good idea. And then we're going to talk about the types of SDNs and also about virtual network functions, and a bit of software-defined WAN, or SASE, as it's also called. And at last, I'm going to show you a tool named P4, and in the end, we're going to do some case studies. Now it's not showing the next slide. Yeah, there it is. So, a bit of why. We've seen global traffic trends. They're all pointing upwards. Here shows how much mobile traffic there is at the moment. Here we see how much video we are consuming. It shows that the reason why it is increasing is mainly because of video. But there's also a lot of traffic due to IoT or bots. We can see here that the number of the amount of traffic originating from bots is in fact now more than the traffic initiating from humans. So we also have what we call tactile internet demands, and we have future technologies like self-driving cars that is also demanding faster networks with lower latencies. What this requires is that we must have ultra-low latency, like down to maybe 1 millisecond, it's ultra high availability demands, and we also demand, of course, end-to-end security. And the elephant in the room here is that this is not so easy, but it actually requires that. Well, we have some physical limitations like the speed of light, and to increase the bandwidth further, we actually has to reduce the length. So we have to bring the data centers closer to the end users for them to have higher speed. And that also means that we have to bring the services firewall, IDSs, etc., down to data centers that is closer to the users. And that also includes these different technologies that we saw instead, like in tactile demands and self-driving cars. We have to bring the services very close to where the application runs. And we also have a security problem. So when we have a lot of devices and we have a demand for low latency and higher network speeds, we also have security problems. So this is an example of a simple network with two light bulbs. Why isn't this showing the animation?
Maybe we switch the... I don't have it. It is PPT, probably.
Ah.
This is PDF.
Yes. Oh, I see.
That's why.
So we have a fantastic animation here.
if you have your USB stick or something, and then we can move the PPTX file here.
But I will just, okay. Maybe I should have the blackboard, but anyway, we'll just explain it.
Maybe after the break we can find the file and then show the animation.
Yeah.
Sorry for that.
Oh, no problem. So let's say this is a network with a lot of devices, and if one of these devices were infected, now you see all devices are infected here, but in the beginning of the animation, it was only one that was infected. And because of the firewall is being to the far right here, if one device is infected, it can easily spread inside of the network. So what we really want is to have the IDS and the firewall as close to the end user as possible. So when we are down to single devices or single ports or IoT devices or computers or whatever, when we are able to segment down to one device, we call it micro-segmentation. I will come back to that. So why? Also, there was an animation, but it doesn't matter.
No. I have an idea.
Oh, it's okay. No problem.
There is an institution called email. You see? Now, if I have received your presentation email,
I can do it. So just
No. You will get this webmail, and then I'm just going to download your presentation. Let's see, where are you? This. So you get your PPT presentation. Download. And this should work. Now we open that one. Then the animation must work.
It's not so good.
It's not so important, but it's better when you have what you want. So, hopefully, try this now.
Let's see.
It's PPT. That's the original.
So, okay. Now there's, I think there's a switch between a, because now I have presentation mode on this one. And, yeah, but.
Is it PDF or PDF?
No, but are you recording this now or are you recording this?
I'm recording what is on this screen.
Okay.
Yeah.
So could we have that on this screen or?
I think, let's see, is this presentation mode?
Yeah.
But if we go back and say something like this, Yeah, so let's see. And then, that's the animation. It works. So you just move
yeah,
this.
Yeah, but I was thinking.
I think it will, only this will be on the screen.
Yeah, it looks good on the.
Yeah. It looks good. So it should be like that. So they are only going to see this and not what you see here. And
okay.
That's what you want, probably.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Thank you. So we went through this. They can all be infected.
The animation.
Now it was not that important. Yeah. So in summary, what the motivation is here is that we have a need for scaling. By that, I mean we need some kind of automation and some kind of management to handle all these devices. And we need to make the network faster in order to reduce the latency demands. And let's see if the animation. There it was. And I can also use the arrows probably.
Yeah.
So, and we also need to control the network by having some kind of centralized intelligence. And within software-defined networks, the point is that it's difficult to program a network if you have to consider a lot of distributed devices. But if you have one central component, it's much more easier to program the network. So by having one central controller, the everything becomes easier. And the last thing that I mentioned was network security, and that is what we are going to talk about today. And also we have some other requirements that we inherit from traditional networks that we of course need to create networks with reliability and low costs and have the flexibility and performance that traditional networks require. So, next topic. What is SDN? It's a paradigm, it's a technology, a vision, a buzzword, but the truth is it's maybe a bit of everything. But first of all, it is a buzzword. Simply told, it is a piece of software that controls a network, and that is SDN. But it has evolved. So, in the beginning, it was a set of hard-crafted rules that you programmed and sent to switches and routers. And then the SDN controller came. Okay, I have to stand near the microphone. And then we have seen that end users are also being involved in the SDN paradigm. And now we see SDN and APIs and traditional networks, they are going hand in hand. So we are there now. And in the future, we assume that artificial intelligence is going to be more used in software-defined networks. So if we take a look at the formal characteristics of software-defined networks, they say that it is about having having a control plane and a data plane separated, and having centralized control. And if we can tell that in an easy way, I told some of my employees that imagine that we have now a set of distributed routers, and in these routers we have what we call we have the brain, the routing engine, and we have line cards where you have all the connectors. So let's say we take the routing engine out of every router and we place that in one data center, and we just have the line cards distributed. Then we have centralized the logic, and we have the data plane distributed. And that is the main thing about SDN. And that, when you have that centralized, it enables network programmability. And then if you go into the details here, there are so many flavors, so many different protocols, and different ways to do that exact separation of the control plane and database. So what I'm going to talk about today is using OpenFlow. That is one standard of doing this. And when we talk about SDN in the academia, it is mostly OpenFlow we are talking about. But as I mentioned, there are also other perceptions of SDN. It doesn't have to be open flow. So let's say you use Snort and you have some kind of software configuration that do something based on the alarms in Snort. And let's say you configuring a network, then you have SDN because you have a centralized thing that makes triggers, and you have a script that do something in the network. That is SDN. In the SDN architecture, we mostly refer to this figure. We have some kind of data plane, a controller, and we have some kind of application interface. So the control plane consists of one or many network controllers. So here are some pictures of some examples. When we're talking about OpenFlow, the most popular one are ONOS, Floodlights, Open Daylight, and Knox Box controllers. And you can also communicate east, west, so you can have multiple controllers, because one controller will have a single point of failure, so it's recommended to have multiple of them so they can take over from each other, or you can build a different kind of hierarchy between them. The northbound API are connected to the controller, so you can do programming on the network. So let's say you're running a virtual access control application, you can use the API down to the controller to control the network from that application. So this is where the programmability comes in. OpenFlow is just a standardized way to control network traffic on switches or routers. It is defined by the Open Networking Foundation, and it's the ONF was founded in 2011. That is quite old now. It was 90 companies. I'm not sure it's a lot more now, but they are further developing SDN in the OpenFlow track. So, a I'll try to explain a bit of how OpenFlow works. This is some slides from the Stanford University. So let's say we have a new thing in the network we want to employ. An example, let's say a new ARP function or a new new switching capability, a new packet header. If the switches were, let's say, one way to do it is to make a new RFC, get the switch vendors to make new software and distribute that software to all the switches. Then you can have this new functionality by doing switch upgrade. But let's say you have centralized the logic, then it's possible to have just install this new function on the centralized server, and then you will get new things faster to market, or faster, you will get it faster implemented in your network. So a basic thing with OpenFlow is the use of flow tables. When a packet is received on one port, the switch does not broadcast this packet on all ports, but if it does not know where to send the packet, the switch sends the packet to the control plane and asks the control plane where to send the packet. And then it receives a flow table where the instructions of where to send the packet are contained. And then it learns that, so until it gets some new information, it knows that a packet with header blah 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 is going to be sent to that port. So with a flow, we define a flow as a set of attributes that is identifying a group of packets. Let's say packet header HTTP, or let's say port 80 to destination 80 dot blah 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 IP. So you have a destination and a port, and all that traffic is a flow. So that means we can define a flow as an application flow, all HTTP traffic, or all traffic going to Canada, gyms, whatever. And then we apply an action to what to do with that flow. And that is the information that is in a flow table. What identifies a group of packets, and what action should be done. Should we allow it, deny it? Should we set low priority to the packet, or different kind of actions? And also, of course, what port to send the packet to is an attribute. So this is an example. We have some attributes that identifies the flow. And I think, yeah, these are all blue ones. So they are just the flow identification. So if we compare that to a traditional switch, then we will only have MAC destination, because a traditional switch only looks at MAC addresses and learns where MAC addresses belongs on what ports. But when we use OpenFlow, we have more than just the MAC address. We have headers from just not only layer 2, but also layer 3 and 4, or even higher layers. So then we can make traffic flows and rules based on all kind of headers. So, yeah, this is then an example of a regular switch, as I mentioned. Well, this is a advanced flow rule, what we call flow switching. And then these different kind of attributes that can identify a flow has evolved over time. I think we are even at OpenFlow 1.6 now. So that means that the number of headers available in the standard are increasing. So let's say MPLS headers or IPv6 extensions. Actually that was extension headers. But there are the number of headers available in the standard are increasing. That is my point. So here is an example of how you can play with SDN. So if you want to spin up some virtual switches, have a controller. Here is a SDN security tutorial of how to play with it. So here is an example where you can download a controller on VirtualBox, spin up the controller, spin up some switches, and create some flows and see how you can send a ping from one switch to another and see how the packets are.
Somebody is asking something. Let's see. Just a second. Chat. How quickly have OpenFlow been implementing new headers? That's the question for you.
Yeah, I have to come back to that. Yeah. But they are not. I will have a slide in the end that shows that there is, in fact, another solution to this, because honestly, it is OpenFlow has the same problem as all the switch vendors have. Let's say there comes a new RFC or a new header. It takes time before it is implemented for all the vendors, for all the controllers and all the switches. It takes ages. And that is a problem. So because of that problem, there has been a new standard that I will talk about in the end of this presentation. And that is called P4. So, yeah, I will come back to that. So if you're interested, I've also set up a link to a video where you can take a look at Floodlight, that is another controller, to see how that is set up, and that's to see how it works and how it plays. I will not do that demo because it takes so much time, so much easier just to take a look at YouTube or do a lab. So, why SDN in the context of IDS and IPS? It is basically because SDN can simplify things. You can have less hardware because you can run the software virtually. You can centralize it, and you'll have lower costs, and you will be able to have higher performance, and you can also have lower network latency, but that depends. So IPS can be Well, I will not talk too much about traditional IDS because I think you know that. But the problem is often that how can we make traditional IPS IDS work even faster, and how can we make it perform better, and how can we apply rules to make it work more to scale better? And that is the context I'm going to talk about now. Firewalls, they are fast because they do things in ASICs, but servers are slow in packet forwarding. So how can we combine these different things to make it perform better? So I'm going to drop this as well. Box. So there are also, as you know, different kind of detections. You have signature-based, anomaly-based, you know all this stuff. But if we put SDN on top of this, maybe we then can make things better, and that we will see. Yeah, so here are some examples of how we can use SDN in context with IDS, IPS. So let's say we are using OpenFlow to do distributed firewalling. When we have distributed all these flow tables, we can, by having a centralized server programming the firewall rules towards that server, it can distribute a stateless firewall to all switches quite easily. So using deny flows on the edge based on what you detect centralized is a very very common example. You can also, by using some kind of virtual environment, you can distribute these collectors. That is actually just collecting flows from switches and send that to the controller. And also, by separating the control plane and the data plane, we can minimize the blocking latency. And also, when we have all the flows available on one server, we are able to discover relations in the network that is not so easy to see when you see it from one switch perspective, but we can have a global perspective of all traffic in the network. We can take a look at, let's say, rate or network topology, and we can see example DDoS attacks because we have a global picture of the network. And we can also, as I mentioned, introduce new attributes in the decision-making processes. So let's say we can differentiate network failures from DDoS loads or we can do more advanced programming. So what can SDN then help us with? We have different actions that you can do on a flow rule. One is, for example, traffic redirection or isolation. And you can also put down deny rules that makes a stateless firewall. Stateless firewalls. And we can also do blocking and quarantine by using network slicing that I will come back to later. And in the monitoring perspective, it is possible to do deep packet inspection if we use NFV, that I also will come back to later. And It's possible to just collect things from the switches by using the OpenFlow standard. So flow monitoring comes kind of out of the box. So you don't have to distribute agents in order to get information about what flows are going on. But all these different traffic flows, they are, you just will have them as when you turn on SDN or you turn on OpenFlow. So there will be no polling, no batch pushing, but every flow is just, it's instantly updated on the centralized server. What time is it now?
We have 10 minutes for this.
Okay. Yes. Then we'll to do four, and then... So there are two types of SDN approaches in context of IDS, IPS. So it is to route the traffic to the IDS servers, or to Snort, for instance, and you have then you will have a kind of distributed DPI. And you can, on the other hand, you can utilize the flow information in the flow tables, as I mentioned. Then you will just have the information that is available in the flows, because all the network traffic will not go through the servers, but you will only have flow information. So you have the, you can have all the header, all the traffic, or just the headers. And these setups are quite different. I have worked with networks from a broadband delivery perspective all years, and therefore I'm drawing figures the wrong way. I'm always having the perspective from the operator, and then seeing it down to the customers, down to the internet. I have to apologize, but here the traffic is coming from the right and not the left. So here is an example of how we can route traffic to IDS servers. So let's say we want to have in a physical network, we want to have a IDS server on the edge, but it is expensive to have a lot of computers distributed. So what we aim to do is just to tunnel all the traffic up to the data center and back again, in order to virtually have that function on the edge. And what SDN can do then is just by not using tunnels, but just using traditional IP routing or flow tables, it can direct the traffic to the server, and that it then also knows that what the traffic coming from the server is actually going in the right, taking the right path. So in this example here, SDN enables the traffic to flow in this direction, and that is not possible in with IP destination routing or traditional switching. You have to have some additional flow information, or you have to, let's say the centralized switch there, it has to have some information of where is the packet coming from? So it has to both look at source and destination headers in order to do the packet forwarding correctly. But my point is here that SDN enables us to do advanced routing. And that enables us also to have these centralized servers doing IDS IPS. Oops. Where is the...
That's what you sent to me.
Yeah, but I'm missing one. Yeah, that is my fault. Yeah, there is, because the other one is... Yeah, but I can just explain it. So we have this figure where we use advanced routing techniques, but let's say another approach is just to send the packet headers to the server. And then the traffic will flow directly from the internet and down to the destination, the land on the bottom here, but the centralized servers will, by just looking at the headers that it has collected, being able to do some kind of decision of is the traffic going to be denied or not. I mentioned you can use SDN to do OpenFlow to do this traffic forwarding in an advanced manner. But there are also a lot of other competing technologies of how to do advanced routing. And here are some examples. And I did my PhD in looking into network service headers. There are also other people doing research in doing advanced forwarding in different kind of for different kind of protocols. And the same thing applies to what kind of SDN control plane are we talking about. Here there are also multiple choices. So if you ask the vendors like Juniper, Cisco, and the big ones, they are using BGP for everything. So they are using an advanced version of BGP that is called FlowSpec. That is basically doing the same thing. So here are two examples of how this can be implemented in practice. So here you can also take a look at some videos and see how SDN together with DPI can work. Oh, here it was. It wasn't gone. Sorry. Now I explained I explained that figure previously, how the traffic from the internet can go down to the LAN without traversing through the servers. So here is the example where the switches are sending the packet headers to the controller. And here I mentioned there are different kind of declaration methods of how to inform the switches of how to do the network configuration. So let's say in the OpenFlow example, the packet is going up to the controller, and the controller has the information of where the packet should be sent. Then the controller sent the flow table down to the switch. And this method is called the imperative method. The declarative method is when you have in advance informed the switches. So let's say you are periodically distributing the flow tables from the controller without having the switches One way is to have the switch ask the controller to have the throw table, and the other way is to the controller sends the information to the to the switches. And we call that the declarative way, when the centralized controller is declaring this is how the network looks like. And this is where Cisco, they use OpFlex, or also FlowSpec is one method here, where you have all the flow tables in the controller and you just distribute them. So you don't have this bottleneck as the open flow controller can be. Yeah. So here is an example of how it works with open flow in a bit more detailed level. I'm just this one, and I want more, and I'm done. So the SDN with OpenFlow, you can see that the packet is sent to the controller, and you can have an SDN dApp that can report to Snort and make the decisions in the app itself, and then the app can send the forwarding decision down to the flow switches. And there have been a lot of research on this. So if you go to Google Scholar and you put in IDS, IPS, and SDN, you will see a lot of research within this area. And also, there are some open source solutions that we can take a look at here on these links. I have personally tried this Defense for All. That is actually a thing that Radware now has commercialized. Yeah. Then we take a break.
We do that. Stop sharing. And then we say stop recording.
Yeah.
And then we get out from this leave session, and then we re-enter it. But this is still the other one. The Onum is still recording. So yeah,
okay.
The microphone is on. Okay, so we actually, let's see, collaborate, and then we check whether. Recording, yeah, it's processing the recording, so it will be okay. It will be okay. Then we shall re-enter the course room in 10 minutes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's good that I had an idea that your presentation was still in email, so I could actually download it here from Duke. Thank you for that.
Ja. Har det vært noen som har gjort masteroppgaver på dette området her?
På dette?
Eller PLD for så
vidt? Nei. Jeg vet ikke. Nei. Men det egentlig min feil, fordi jeg kunne egentlig foreslå et tema. Men han stemmer, den forrige studenten, han stemmer var ikke det?
Nei.
Artificial
Intelligence. Ja. Men for min del så klarer jeg bare én.
Ok.
En av gangen.
Ja.
Ja.
Så du kan sende en til oss.
Ja.
Da kan vi diskutere temaet, og hvis det er det, da er det supert.
Ja. Ja, det er for så vidt det. Så jeg har noen ideer. Men det blir jo kanskje ikke før til...
Ja, det skjer om våren. Rett og slett. Ja, kanskje han er også deltidsstudent. Hos oss, eller?
Ja, nei, den den masterstudenten nå, Bo, og... Nei, hun skal gjøre et annet tema. Ikke dette temaet her.
Ja, ja.
Ja. Men jeg tenkte på etter at hun ferdig igjen, at det kan bli en ny igjen. Og da om et år, kanskje.
Men de gjør studenter med på Miss D, ikke sant? Den tids Miss.
Det vet jeg.
Eller NTNU i Trondheim.
Nei, det her.
Det Miss D.
Ja.
Kanskje Miss M, experience based. For det mange fra industri som tar det.
Ok.
Ja, det ikke sikkert. Jeg vet ikke om din kollega som ble ferdig med studien i våres var egentlig Miss M eller Miss D. Det vet jeg ikke. So, how are you doing?
I'm good.
This is our ambitious PhD student. He's going to have two exams on December 1st. You know that?
Two exams?
Yes, you have intrusion detection, you have wireless. And both will take place on December 1st. Do you know that?
I was thinking maybe we can adjust the date.
We cannot, actually, because it is defined by the administration. So you will have one oral exam in the morning and one in the afternoon. Two so. Oh. So all the PhD students must have exam on December 1st. I don't know why, but that's not up to me to decide. So I have actually four subjects. So we have two crypto, modern cryptology and selected topics. I have wireless communication security and I have intrusion detection and prevention for PhD students. And all the exams must take place on December 1st. And also the master, this one, they will have a written exam on December 1st as well. But that doesn't apply to you, so you don't worry about that, but you will have to prepare two exams for
once. Okay.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck.
Okay.
This is your first year here?
Yeah.
So, you know the format of the oral exam?
No.
I use scissors to cut the questions from one piece of paper and then turn them around and you select at random. Mm-hmm. One question, you have 20 minutes for preparation and then you can talk on the whiteboard.
Oh.
Yeah, something like that in my office. In the T building, and there will be two professors, me and the other one. The other one can be
online. So I will choose the topic that I will present.
Yeah, you pick the question, you prepare, and then you present. And then you pick the next one and you present it. And then I think three or four questions will be in total.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
I've done this a couple of times.
That's the format. So I can help you in the sense that I can send some sample questions to you.
I
can do that. A list of sample questions.
But the format is very nice. It's a very nice concept. So, yeah.
It's a classical pre-electronic era exam. The only complication is that the administration requires that there will be two professors. So it's difficult to organize. The other one will probably be online.
Okay.
On Teams. But in the case of IBS, I think he will be here physical.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but you have to write your projects and I need the topics.
I have
the deadline is 18th of November.
Yeah, but I have two topics. I will. I want to do something because my PhD work is on social robots in public space. So I want to do something on detecting illicit PDF malware.
Good.
And then the other one I'm thinking of.
You can just put the title. The
I want to. I got a new intercept from this Canadian CIA.
We are going to discuss that tomorrow.
Yeah, I will write, I'll send
it. NSLKDD.
I will. But KDD is old. This is something more recent.
And so it has to be something that is related to the subjects and something possibly, because it's for you, that it's related to your topic of thesis. But it's not compulsory if you don't want that. So if
the only
requirement is that it is from the subject. The other one is to help the students. It's not required that you choose a topic that has something to do with the topic of your PhD. It doesn't have to be so. Let's see. Maybe somebody is asking something.
No, because I'm still out of... Anyway, we joined the course room.
This anime.
Okay, the only thing that remains is that I start recording, but it will be okay. Okay, we wait a couple of minutes and then we can start again.
Okay, we can start. I don't know whether the others didn't appear again, but
Okay, I just start recording here, and then you can. That's it. You can start. This is okay.
Good. Welcome back.
It's probably my mail.
Okay.
Just ignore that.
Sometimes. Yes. So this is a summary of what we just talked about. We have the way of sending the traffic to a centralized IDS server in the cloud, that where you can simulate to have these servers on the edge. And we have the other approach where we can send the headers to a server and doing a distributed firewall by using OpenFlow. And as I mentioned, both these methods, there are also other competing technologies. But this is, both of these is is OpenFlow based. But as an example, in Aizawa, where I work now, we use another solution to do volumetric anti-DDoS, or to do DDoS protection by using a BGP solution from Juniper. Yeah. So, next topic. This is how we can use network function virtualization to do IDS, IPS. So, as I mentioned, the SDN is evolving in different flavors. We have in 2008 the last, then when OpenFlow came, and then we have seen that the concept of this technology is evolving into a lot of different flavors. And also when we talk about cloud computing and other topics like software-defined radio, they are all evolving in all different flavors, where they use the principle of separating control plane and data plane, but the different technologies are so many. But one of these flavors is NFV, that is coming from is actually coming from the OpenFlow, and it's coming from cloud computing. So what we have now is that we have SDN that can support monitoring and forwarding of traffic, and from cloud computing we have virtual servers that we can instantiate quite simple. So NFV is basically a combination of automating server deployment and automating networks. So when we are able to automate both how to set up servers and how to set up networks, we have a capability of scaling up quite fast. So when we do these two things, we call it, we often refer to this automation of servers as infrastructure as code. You just define you have a notepad of configuration of how to set up the server, and that piece of code enables you to spin up that server wherever you want, basically. And that can be, for example, in some on-prem VMware solution, or it can be something in Azure or other cloud vendors. And these two concepts leads to NFV. That is NFV, in fact. So what then limits what NFV is that NFV is actually a network function that is virtualized. So you can have infrastructure as code for everything, but when we're talking about network functions such as a WAN accelerator, a BNG, a radio access node, an IoT gateway, a firewall, a DHCP service, any service that is related to handling network traffic, we call it network function. And when we do network function virtualization, the functions we are talking about are basically these kind of functions. So SDN is just a key enabler for NFV to work. So what NFV is that we have actually just standardized how the infrastructure as code should be written. So let's say you have a lot of blueprints or templates. You say that for defining a IDS, it should look like the standard should look like this. We have standardized how to write the infrastructure as code. And you have standardized that both for the cloud environment and for the network. And the organization that has done that is Etsy. Yes. So it's basically just a standardization of how to configure these two things. Still the email?
Question or something?
Yeah, you can ask.
No, I'm saying, is it like the shots?
Yeah, it doesn't pop out up anything here, but
okay.
I don't know. So we are also then different kind of NFV topologies, because when we are talking about standardizing how to set up servers, there are different kind of data centers. So one way is to say that we have distributed data centers. And if we take it to the far edge, we can say that on the equipment to the customers, we can actually run data centers. So we also can use our cell phones, our mobiles, to allow remote parties to run VMs on our devices, then we have the extreme part of data centers. But doing this kind of edge or distributed data centers is one way of doing it. And the other one is to have a centralized model. And of course, the thing that is growing to be the most used one is to use the hybrid model, where you use the best things of both models, and that leads to this multi-cloud environment. I call this function here virtual network functions. So the function we took a look at previously was the function of DHCP or ARP or no, not ARP, but IDS, etc. The word VNF is not so much used anymore, because the world has gone from a virtual, from using VMs to have to use containers. So now we call them CNF, standing for containerized network functions. And the standard was first built based on a virtual network function. That means that every function should be a VM. But now we are so used to using containers, and it turns out that these are so much more efficient than running virtual machines. So therefore, the word VNF is now replaced by CNF. So they use both. Another concept of NFV is service function chaining. So let's say you have multiple network functions, multiple containers that are running different kind of functions that you want your network traffic to traverse. If you subscribe to multiple network services, then you want your traffic to traverse all these different VMs or containers. And this concept of chaining the traffic through these different services is called service function chaining. And that is an advanced way of doing network routing. And here we can, of course, use SDN, But we can also use other technologies, such as I previously mentioned, network service headers. There is a competing technology. So let's say the end users are subscribing IDS as a service. Then it is standardized how to spin up the virtual machine or the container, and it is standardized how to set up the network. So if we want to sell this function to end users from a broadband service delivery perspective, then we can just press play and then the server will spin up and the network will be configured, standardized. And if the user additionally want other services, then you can chain these services by using the concept service function chaining. So there is also a standard called service function chaining, that is an RFC, that defines how these services are combined and how we can formally combine them. So therefore you need some kind of definitions. So as I mentioned, one way is doing open flow, and another way is doing, for example, network service headers. But of course we can also use traditional tunnels. So we create one tunnel from A to B, another tunnel from B to C, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And that is when, if you're using, for instance, VMware, VMware, they use Geneve and VXLAN to do this kind of headers between all the compute resources you have in the data centers. So it is, in fact, tunnels that is mostly used there when you create virtual networks. So what else does NFV give us? It gives us the flexibility to virtually place inline network functions such as Snort wherever we want in the network. And we then, of course, reduce deployment and operational costs. And we can then improve scaling by automatically instantiate new virtual IDS boxes in the data center and divide the different flows to different servers. So another way that we have done some research within is how to apply this to the IoT environment, because IoT devices, they have constrained capabilities. So it's not so easy for us to deploy, let's say, a firewall to a IDS device. But if we can put that firewall on the edge on the network and virtually place that firewall on the IoT device, then we have made a more secure IoT network. So I'm going to show you that example here. So let's say this one is infected, and the virus spreads to this one, it easily just spreads to everything in the network, because we have the firewall on the edge. So what we really want to do is to not have the firewall on the edge, because that is perimeter security is something we did in the old days. Now we want to have endpoint security on every device. But for when we use Windows computers, all fine. But when we are talking about IoT and operational technology such as industrial control systems, etc., we don't have this capability on the endpoints. So we want to have other solutions. We in fact need this perimeter security functionality. But how can we then use modern networks to virtualize that? This, well, NFV is one solution. So what we want to do is have to virtually have the IDS, IPS, and the firewall functionality on the edge. So how can we do that? Well, we put the IDS function in the cloud, and we put the firewall functionality on the gateways or on the switches or routers. So let's say these switches or routers have distributed data center capabilities. Then we can run VMs or containers on these devices. Then we can also run these things on these devices. But that is some, you have to weigh that. Where is it most preferable to run that software? We're assuming it's a lot of mail. Yes. So by using NFV, we are virtually having distributed firewall and IDS/IPS functionality. So using NFV is not it's not so easy to get there. It's a long way to get to your network and data centers standardized in that way, and it requires a lot of protocols. So I have worked with NFV now since 2015, and still we are not there. It takes a lot of effort to get it up and running, and there is some kind of, people are working in silos. So you have network technicians and data center people, they are not communicating at the best at every time. So what we see now is that we have some solutions that is something in between traditional network and the NFV paradigm. And we call it software-defined wide area networks. So a shortcut to get to NFV is to use tunnels from every endpoint into a central server, so virtually everyone is connected to one virtual switch. And then you have SDN capabilities in that virtual switch. It's not maybe a preferable solution because you cannot get the data distributed, the functions, they are not distributed. You have to centralize them into a server somewhere. And that breaks the concept of distributed computing. But still, it's a shortcut of getting there faster. This software-defined, this SD-WAN has also now developed into a new concept called SASE. That is the same thing, but you put security into the SD-WAN concept as well. Next topic is then the P4. I mentioned that it was a question, is the open flow evolution going fast enough? And I will claim no, it's not. And therefore, we have got this new protocol that is called, or no, new programming language, in fact, that is called P4. P4 is, the next generation of SDN. It is a programming language that allows us to program how how a switch should behave when it receives a packet on one switch and how it should process that packet. So we are in fact making a virtual ASIC language. We are able to program ASICs, so to speak, in a standardized way. So this opens up for doing new operations on the switch, and we have this kind of we call it pipeline control. I will show you how it works in practice. So P4 is something that was written about in a paper from 2014. And it stands for four P's of programming, protocol, packet, and processors. It is target independent. That means that you can run it on any platform. And it is also very reconfigurable, and you can run like commands on the fly. And Barefoot is the organization that stands behind this this concept. So when you receive a packet in from one port on a switch, we write a set of different code snippets where we define how the switch should handle the packet. And then we deparse it and then sends the packet out on another port. What we actually do here is that we write our own flow rules. We define our own open flow. When, let's say, we need a new header, we can define that in the programming language. So we can, let's say, we want a new header that tags a specific packet as suspicious, for example. Then we can be crazy and we can say between layer 2 and layer 3 we insert a bit that will exist only in our network. And then our switches can read that specific bit and do some packet handling based on that bit. And when the packet goes out of our network, we remove that bit. So that we enable new functionality quite easy. So the way this the P4 programming language is built up is that we define all the headers that we have. We define how to parse the packet. And then we do some definition of what should we do with the packet when it comes into the switch, the ingress processing. And then we do the same thing when the packet is going out, when we have decided where to send the packet. We do the egress processing, do some check some update, deparse the packet, and send it out again. And this is a high-level language, so the code is like two pages to define how to write a switch. And it's quite amazing how good this language is. And I've seen so many research papers where they utilize P4 to do labs on different, let's say, new network headers and stuff like that. And that also, there is a research potential in using this in a IDS-IPS context, because you can actually tag the network packet with whatever you want and send that network packet to a next function that can do more monitoring or more analysis. So you can like split the functions into different software pieces on different servers based on this network routing functionality. But this is something relatively new, but well, it's not that new. It has existed since 2014. But from the vendor's perspective, let's say Juniper, Cisco, Huawei, they support this now, but it has not, should I say, taken off yet. So what do we have so far? We have that SDN can route network traffic dynamically from where we want. We have that SDN can monitor the network traffic on nearly every box, every SDN capable box, and we can do stateless firewalling, and if we can deploy virtual services where we want, and NFV and SDN can scale by slicing different flows into different IDS IPSs, and we have P4 that can make customized flow rules based on IDS and IPSs. Everything is virtual, and everything is just an application. So the last thing here is a little case study. You know this, you know amplification, you know distributed reflection attacks, you know this, and you know this. So this is an example. Here, again, the traffic is coming from the right. So let's say we have an example here where DDoS bots, they are sending a lot of traffic from the right to the server on the left. And that server is a DNS resolver. So the DNS server is overloaded, but the link is not full. So what solutions can we do here? How can we stop the attack? The solution is that we know that there are DNS responses that are coming in. So what we want to know is that do we have any DNS orphans? Of course, there should be a DNS request coming from the resolver where that has a corresponding DNS response. So when we are hammered with DNS responses, if we are able to see if these response messages has a corresponding reply, then we know what messages that are legit or not. So we want to know, are there any orphan DNS responses? If we have all the flows collected in a flow table in OpenFlow, then there will be an existing flow there that shows that we have, that there was a DNS request. So when it comes a DNS flow, we can have an app that detects if there was an open flow. And this is how we can use OpenFlow flow tables to detect these kind of attacks. Here is another example. Now we are seeing DNS requests. So we cannot use this orphan. We cannot use the flow table to see if there are any orphan responses because this is an authoritative DNS server. So it actually has to answer this these requests. But normally, all these requests come from multiple of different sources where they often have the same source. So when the DNS server are replying to all these requests, it sends the reply down to one victim, for example. There is actually nothing to do with this, except from you can monitor how much traffic. You can set up trigger levels. Let's say you are seeing so much to and from this destination, so you just put this, you have this different kind of thresholds for different source and destination addresses. Another example. Here we see this is a ITSIVA network, and it receives a lot of DNS responses from all over the world. ITSIVA has a network with multiple internet routers where where internet is not coming from one uplink, but is coming from multiple uplinks. Then we need to stop the attack at the edge. It's not enough to say stop the attack from Stockholm and Oslo. I have to stop it from all edge routers. So we need to distribute some kind of firewall rules down to all routers. And that is common for all kind of service providers or people or vendors or customers that have multiple internet uplinks. So here, some kind of open flow functionalities or BGP flow spec, as I mentioned earlier, is a nice technology to distribute these flows, deny flows. So I have also some example of some research that is confirming what I just told you about. One thing is this function where you just have to find some kind of threshold, and how you can use SDN to find that threshold and say that you summarize all DNS request replies, and you put a threshold on it, and you use SDN to that. Here is one research article. You can see how that works. And here is another example that is doing the same thing, but doing it in a bit more sophisticated way. And it uses P4 to do, as I mentioned previously, you can tag a packet and you can send it to another machine and let that packet handle it in a special way. So, yeah. Summary. We have seen that advanced network protocols and next generation cloud computing by using NFV can help us with doing IDS and IPS in a more agile and faster way in a big scale. Thanks.
Case of DDoS, let's say Simflon account attack, and then you decide to send the firewall and the instruction to the edge. What would they do? Would they drop the packets, or how would they filter it at the edge?
How?
For instance, at this edge, multiple requests is coming.
Yep.
So the firewall, how is it going to drop the attack packets? How will it differentiate the attack packet from the genuine request?
It has to be defined by a flow rule. Okay. So you have to learn how does the packet look like. You have to identify what is attack packages and what is not. So if you don't know that, you're not able to put to make a rule. If you do not know that, the only way is to do volumetric limiting. Like, you don't know what to do. So you must be able to identify what is the DDoS traffic and define that by a flow rule. So if you don't know the flow rule, you don't know the traffic, you're not able to send the deny rule. Oh. But when you have use OpenFlow or other standards, you see all the flows in the network, and you can. It is possible to detect patterns where you can at least guess a bit what is identifying the DDoS. Yeah. But very often it is. You have one victim, so you can see you see that here is a lot of traffic to that specific customer, and by that you have one destination IP address where you can begin to see if there are any patterns around that, and computers are good in doing so. So these applications that we have seen from WADware and Defense for All, they are starting to be good in detecting this traffic by using flow tables.
Okay. Any questions online? No? If not, then that's the end of our session for today. Tomorrow we are going to talk about testing intrusion detection systems. Stop recording and then leave the session.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for today.
Betalt parkering, så du vet at de har endret reglene slik at det mange flere plasser hvor man kan betale. Ja. Så de som foran fjellstedbyggingen, de fortsatt fri. Men det vanligvis ikke plass hvis man kommer senere, men... Okay, da ingen kontrollavgift. Det var det. Okay, så takk for i dag, og vi snakkes. Så send meg studenten som vil ha masteroppgave. Da kan vi takke og da kan vi foreslå det kanskje på neste år, fordi nå er det for sent for dette, men ja. Vi snakkes. Ha det bra.